Is the mic on?
Why am I not at the gym? Well, I go to leave this morning and the garage door will not open. Now, I don't know if you know much about getting to the gym in Los Angeles, but you need your car to get to the gym. So now I can't get out of the garage. Well, I'm sure I could manually lift it or something, but I then get to the gym. But I can't. I'm a perfectionist. I can't do anything unless everything else is perfect. Meaning, I can't go to the gym knowing that I'm going to have to come home and deal with this garage door that isn't opening. So I need to resolve it first. So now I'm on the phone. LiftMaster. I'll say the name of the company because they're amazing. Every single time I call LiftMaster, they have somebody on the other line that understands the product perfectly. And they'll go, okay, go up to it, press this button. Is it, how many times are blinking? Three times. Is it now blinking red? Yeah. Did it just blink green? Like, they know it. Why every customer service department in the world should go to LiftMaster and train. So I think we resolved the issue. They've got to send me a new wall remote control. I think maybe that got sizzled with the LA rains, but they're remarkable. So now 40 minutes later, my entire day is off schedule because I wanted to go to the gym. Well, first of all, I wanted to go out and have my garage door open. Then I wanted to go to the gym. Then I wanted to ruin the gym experience by having a falafel sandwich afterwards. And then I wanted to come and record this. Well, after the garage door didn't open, I just wanted to go back to bed. That's what I wanted to do. But instead, I'm out here. I've got, I'm coming over laryngitis. Oh, then I go in the house. Oh, shit, this day just never ends. And I go to wash my hands because I've been touching the dirty LiftMaster garage door, you know, the thing on top of the garage. The opener, the machine, I'm touching it. It's, my hands are dirty. I go to hit the pump soap in the kitchen sink. That's not working. So I fix one thing. Now this isn't working. So I take it apart. I'm not even making this up. I take it apart and I think the tube. Now this isn't, I don't know what kind of life you guys lead, but I have a stainless steel hand soap dispenser. It's attached to the wall. It's not cheap. Okay? So this isn't something like you just throw out and buy another, go on Amazon. So I take it apart. I've decided that the tube that carries the soap from the bottom of the soap dispenser holder all the way up to the top, which ejects into my hand, that's clogged. So I put it to my mouth. I've decided I'm going to do soap dispenser mouth to mouth. I'm going to clear the line. How about that? I'm going to, well, I still can't get the taste of the soap out of my mouth. It's still in my mouth. Episode 70. What's wrong with Orny Adams? Well, what isn't? I mean, that's 3.5 minutes right there of the crap I've been dealing with. I'm doing this episode with laryngitis and now the taste of soap in my mouth. Yes, he does. He's got great big eyes. What an episode we have. Bringing this down. No, I'm bringing it up. Orny Adams. The song always makes me happy. I wish more people would write songs about me. That's the truth. Well, I welcome back to this episode. At the end, I will be playing an interview I had with our friend Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler, writer, producer on Criminal Minds. He's writing and producing other TV projects. He's got one hell of a podcast himself. Well, I called Jim. I said, hey, we got this guy. We got the Idaho murderer. What's the deal? Give me the insights. You profiled the guy. How close was your estimation to what actually took place, what happened? I don't know what the word is. I just, and believe me, I'm well aware that there's a war going on in the Ukraine and that there's starvation and strife and violence all over the world. I'm very well aware that I'm very fortunate that my problems include my fancy soap dispenser not working at my kitchen sink and that my garage door isn't opening. So I am aware. I am aware. So then I come inside and I say, you know what? I'm going to do the podcast. So I come out here. I'm ready. I set the cameras up and I'm ready to do the podcast. And I get ding notification email. Take our survey. Now, this drives me nuts. Every time I talk to somebody, I got to take a survey. I got to take a survey. Well, in this case, I'm filling it out. I'm filling it out because this woman at LiftMaster was so exceptional. She was so fast, so concise, didn't mess around, and sent out a replacement part immediately that I've got to fill this out. I've got to give her the due she deserves. I assume there's some sort of incentive program for people that get as many great reviews. And I really took the time to answer and then wrote a nice little message underneath saying how exceptional she was and LiftMaster's customer service every time. So that delayed me coming out here even more. You know, I had to fill out the other day. I spoke to American Express. This hotel in Las Vegas, the Flamingo, charged me for internet when it was included in my room. When I checked in, I said to the guy, I'm in the VIP lounge because I'm famous. I'm a big deal. All right. So I check in the VIP lounge and I said, I always say this, is there any comps on my room? And he said, no, but here, take this, take a breakfast or something. And then I said, what's the internet and all that? Yeah, it's included. Well, I come back, there's a $44 charge. I call the Flamingo Hotel and Resorts, and it's like, yeah, which resort? I should play it right now. There's like 50 prompts you got to go through. You got to pick your language. You have to pick what country you're in. You have to pick now which resort. Is it Horseshoe? Is it this casino? Is it this property? And then you get somebody that is nowhere near the property, has no idea what the policy of the property is, has no clue who I spoke to in the VIP lounge that told me the internet was included. All I want is the $44 shot. Who's charging for internet in 2023? There's a resort charge. And she said, well, this wasn't included. I said, I'm telling you. I didn't know what this $44 charge was that just appeared on my American Express. In fact, I'm thinking to myself, why are they allowed to just charge things? I know we put a card down for incidentals, but in this day and age, you should get a text or an email that says, hey, we want to charge your credit card for X amount. Do you accept this charge? Do you accept? They can just put anything on there. Like sometimes I think if you don't tip the people that clean the rooms, that they're just going to eat shit out of the mini bar and you get charged. I tip them because they deserve it. I mean, what a job cleaning room after room, but also it's insurance, so they don't put charges on my credit card. Now, why American Express allows this, I don't know. So I spoke to this woman. I said, listen, I know you weren't there, but when I checked in, the guy said it's included. And she said, I'm sorry, I can't take away. I said, there's nobody over there. There's nobody can take this away. You don't have a manager? You don't? Can you call the hotel? No. She didn't want to do anything. So she suggested, ready for this? You should call American Express and contest the charges. You're telling me to contest the charges against the company you work for rather than just take the charges off my credit card? I mean, this is buffoonery. You wonder why I have laryngitis. I'm spending all day talking to buffoons. And so what did I do? I called American Express and I said, they told me to contest the charges. They said, this is the solution. So American Express immediately takes it off. American Express is always amazing. I get a survey from American Express. Now I got to fill that out because I like to reward good behavior. Guess who I didn't get a survey from? Flamingo. Interesting, right? Interesting that she didn't hit the send a survey button to that person after the call. So sick of taking surveys. Same thing with an insurance bill. I got an insurance bill. $64 for my my knee, and this is completely covered by Workman's Comp. I was hurt on the set of Teen Wolf filming, and it's covered by Paramount. And I kept calling and saying, this is covered by Paramount. Then I would email the insurance company that's covering it, Sedgwick. Nothing but trouble with those people. Nothing but trouble. And until the head of Paramount Disabilities jumped in and said, hey, get your crap together over there, Cedric. Figure this stuff out. And then they gave me a new adjuster, and she's been much better. But still, I called this to, starting in August, everybody, I kept sending out to my nurse practitioner, to Paramount, to Cedric, everybody. This, I keep getting this bill, and nothing got done about it. Guess what happens now? It gets sent into collections. So now it's my job now is to deal with this, because it's now in my name, and it's in collections. And if you know anything about me, I pay bills on time. I pay my American Express probably two or three times a month. This is how I operate. I can't go to the gym if I owe money, okay? I just can't. So now I have to call them and say, hey, listen, now I'm talking to the collections agency. All I wanted to do was film a movie called Teen Wolf and not get injured. I got injured. Because I'm injured, it's so much more work for me. It's remarkable. You wonder why I have laryngitis. Well, listen to me right now. I'm so amped up. It's like, I've got to get this out of me or I'm going to suffocate myself. I've got to get all these thoughts out. In fact, I just wanted to go take a nap after the garage door didn't open. But I said, listen, I'm in a rare mood. I don't care that my hair looks like this or whatever I look like. I'm just going to go out there and just record the intro and the outro to this Jim Clemente interview about the Idaho murders, which I'm going to play in a few minutes. So I just feel like my entire day is bogged down by surveys, customer service, stuff going wrong. And it's always on me to deal with this. And I said, I can't tell you how many times I called Cedric or emailed him and said, should I just pay the $64 bill and then I'll just send you the receipt? No, we'll take care of it. Well, guess what? They didn't take care of it. And now I have a little ding on my, this better not screw up my credit. I have amazing credit. So let's see. Checking off the stuff we've talked about. I'm actually in a really good mood this week. I know it seems silly, but you know, I shedded another toxic person out of my life. Just abusive. And I think at some point I'll talk about it. Right now I'm still processing. And what's amazing is I have some really smart people in my life that I can confide in, and I can give them the coordinates. And I can say, this is what this person's doing. And the consensus all came back from them the same. And I can't say enough to people that are listening to this that are younger than me or even my age or even older than me that haven't figured it out. But get these people out of your life. You don't need them. Don't be dependent on anybody that is toxic or controlling. You deserve more. You deserve your freedom. And if it doesn't feel right, it isn't right. And somebody told me something that was really interesting. I told them a story and I said, I'm afraid to bring it up to this person. And they said, that's like an abusive relationship if you're scared to say something. So anyway, I'm actually in a really good mood about that. And I feel great. I feel super creative. And some great news, Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas called me. And they said, hey, we heard the podcast. We heard Cirque du Orny, episode 69. We loved it. And the good news is, we got your permission to show the blooper reel of me screwing up the end of the show. So if I had the energy, I would have the computer out right now and I would walk you through how I missed my cue, came out and screwed up the entire ending of Cirque du Soleil. So I will share that probably in episode 71, but this is sort of it's a heavy episode. It's an important episode because we're revisiting this Idaho murder. And they have arrested a suspect. And I was emailing. The first person I contacted with was Jim Clemente. And I wanted to get his opinion. And we were going back and forth all day. In fact, I just sent him a follow-up text. I hope he got back to me. He did. Oh, good. I'll read that on the air because I had another question for him. So I'm going to play the interview in a few minutes. And I think the last line... I'd never done a remote like this. We did it over Zoom and recorded it. And I don't have like the Zoom Pro, so you can only do a 40-minute recording. So I kept going, we got 5 minutes, Jim. And it wasn't like we had some sort of network restrictions because, you know, this is a podcast. It was because I didn't upgrade to the premium service. And the whole time where it's recording, it's flashing, upgrade to premium service. And I'm like, well, how's that going to work? I'm interviewing somebody. Now I'm going to hit upgrade and then put in my credit card. So I'm very happy it recorded the final line where Jim has a message for people that think they may act out, that they may have this feeling that they want to, you know, do a crime. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for Cirque de Soleil, Orny ruining the end. That'll be in the next one. And I may do an extended version for Patreon. I don't know what happened this week, but a lot of new people signed up for Patreon. A lot of new people. Thank you. Every time I get a ding, you got a new Patreon. I'm either getting dings, you got a new Patreon, or ding, could you fill out this survey? So thank you to those people. Thank you to all the people still watching. More Than Loud is climbing. It's climbing. It's about to hit 1.8. Well, it's at 1.7 million, so you can guess what it's about to hit. Views, and people continue to share it. And thank you to all the people that are tipping me or sending me money on Venmo. You guys are just super cool. And again, my other special's up there, Takes a Third. And there's going to be more. There's going to be a lot more to come. Believe me. Believe me. This is, you know, because if I didn't feel like my career was on an upward trajectory, I'd be out. I'd be out. I've done well enough that I can get out. I would do occasional gigs. I'd do these corporates that pay me a lot. I'd do local shows in Los Angeles. But I wouldn't go out there and hustle. You know, like next weekend I'm in Chicago at the Schomburg Improv, which a club I love. And the same people come back every year, year after year. In fact, you can see I've now settled down a little bit. There's a couple that comes every year, and they came to my show. I talk about this on my special. Their first date, a blind date, I think, they came to see me. And then they came back a year later, they were engaged. Then another year later, they're married. Then another year, they've got a kid. Then another year, they've got another kid. And they were telling me the story. And in that moment, I realized how little I got done in that time because I'm still the same. I'm still like I've accomplished besides my career, outside of my career, pretty much nothing, you know, and I put buying a house in that category. But I love doing shows. I'm excited to go back to Schomburg, but I wouldn't bust my ass if I didn't feel like this was going somewhere. I'd be out. I'd find a way to enjoy life. I'd go to one of these countries where my dollar seems to get me a lot more than it does in this country. And I'd hang out on the beach and probably be bored. Probably be other things going on. Another thing that I realize a lot, which I'm sure other people do too, because this whole FOMO, this whole looking at people on Instagram, I don't see most pictures on Instagram. I don't buy into like when you're like skydiving or on the beach or on a private jet or something like that's a very rare occasion for most people. So when I see these pictures, I just think, oh, that's just one day. That's just a day. I'm not envious and I just don't buy into it because most people are putting out there like these couples. I mean, I hate these couples. I know them. I know couples that aren't happy, but online appear very happy. They've got this fake thing going. They want, oh, this is me and my baby. Look at us together. Look at us on this. They're miserable. Oh, not miserable. They're happy. They're not happy. They're fighting a lot. Like it's just, it isn't that. Whatever they're saying, this propaganda that they're in a beautiful relationship. They're struggling as much as every other relationship. I don't know any relationship that doesn't struggle, that doesn't have fights, that they don't all think about leaving at any time. So I don't buy into that bullshit. And when I look at measure my career, okay, now I'm talking about me. I'm off of social media. When I measure me, I am so happy. If I just look around on any given day, I feel so content. I know this is hard for people to believe. It is only when I see other people doing other things that it makes me realize what I haven't achieved. So it's only when I measure myself against other people do I feel insufficient. The rest of the time, I'm telling you, if I didn't see anybody else's life, if I didn't have that as a reflection or a comparison to my own, I would be so happy. I would be so happy. In fact, I know with certainty that if my dreams did come true, if I was like the top comedian going, if I was in films, in TV, I would not be happy. I would not. I would not like the pressure. I would not like question myself. I would not like to have these sycophants around me. I would not like to have these toxic people around me. I don't love many people in this business. And people don't say that. You know why? Because they want to get work from them. Well, I'm saying it. A lot of projects I've worked on, I haven't enjoyed the people I've worked with. Too much ego. Too much people trying to control you. Too much nonsense. It's not, I grew up in a place called Lexington, Massachusetts. Here's a mug that reminds me of where I grew up, okay? I keep it with me. It's in this trailer. I've got mugs in my house. I grew up in a place where the zip code was 02173, later changed to 0240201. Now I can't remember. The area code was 6, the area code was 617, and somehow became 781. 024211. Is Lexington? What is Lexington? I grew up in such a small town where you got on your bike in the morning and you just left. And if your parents wanted you, which was very slim, they were just excited you were out of the house, they would call somebody in the neighborhood and say, have you seen our kid? And we grew up knowing everybody and everybody's business. And the world is too big. This globalization, we're not meant to know every single day a war's going on here. There's protest over here. People are getting shot for this, for that. This economy's going down. Holy shit. We got our own problems right here. Right here, my problems are my soap dispenser was clogged, my lift master, my garage door wasn't opening. Maybe this week in Los Angeles, your roof is flooding. These are the things, your relationship, your health, your family's health. These are the things you're sort of, do you have a job? Are you making, these are the things you're supposed to be worried about. We've taken on the world's problems. That's why every single day, it's just overwhelming. The economy, if you didn't turn on the business channels on TV or read the business section of a newspaper, would you know that the economy was so bad? Would you know if inflation, you go, yeah, it seems like the price of oranges and eggs has gone up. This seems to be a little bit more. Oh, I can't seem to get this part right now. There seems to be a supply chain issue, but they just beat it into our heads about how bad it is everywhere, where all we should be concerned about are our local problems. We need to go back to being local. And if I was local, when I'm local and not loco, which I am loco, but local, I'm content. It's only when I'm exposed to other people's successes and it's shoved in my face, I go, that's right. I should have more. You know, when I'm on stage, I'll be on stage tonight at the Comedy Store. In that moment, I'm the most important person in that room. I mean, what more, how much more beautiful could that be? Hey, for a guy who's got laryngitis, I'm doing pretty good here, aren't I? Well, let's see what Jim. Well, I'll read that at the end. Let's do this. I said to Jim Clemente, he was on episodes 66 and 67, right? Or 67, 68. Anyway, he was on two episodes because the guy won't shut up. So I said, Jim, I need an update. I need an update on this person that they arrested in the Idaho murders. I want your opinion. I thought this is going to take 10 minutes. That's why I didn't get the, I didn't pay for the Zoom Pro. And plus, I don't know if I would get Zoom or something called Zencaster. There's like all these different programs. I got to research it, but I also don't want to do a lot of remote interviews. So I said, Jim, come on. Let's do this. I thought it'd take 10 minutes. Well, I'd cut Jim off because we were hitting the 40-minute mark. And I noticed as the interview went on, I said, Jim, let's do a speed round. Let's just get to this. So I want to thank Jim Clemente for coming back on. And I'm going to play the interview right now. I don't even know how to get in. How do I get into this? Because I don't do this a lot. Stay tuned for my interview. Let me do this first before I play the interviews. Okay. If you want to contact me, the email is whatswrong@ornieadams.com. If you want to listen to this, you're listening now, you're probably on Spotify or Apple or Google or one of those places. If you want to watch it, you can get the current episodes like this one, which will be on my Patreon, patreon.com/ornie, or the older episodes are on YouTube. Do whatever you're most comfortable with. You can spend $5 and you can watch the entire catalog, and then you can ditch me on Patreon if you want. Although it breaks my heart when people leave me on Patreon and they don't even tell me why. I take it personally because I'm a perfectionist. I should have ditched being a perfectionist a long time ago. So episode 70, What's Wrong with Ornie Adams? I present to you right now my interview with Jim Clemente. And I'll see you on the other end of this interview. Thanks. When I heard they had arrested a suspect in the Idaho murders, the first person I called is this guy. And that's why he's the fastest rebooked guest on What's Wrong with Ornie Adams. I welcome back former FBI profiler, TV producer, current TV writer, and one hell of a podcaster himself, Jim Clemente. Welcome back.
How you doing, Ornie? It's always great to see you, man.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I get a charge when I see you. You have this energy that really, I don't know. It's great. It's wonderful.
Likewise.
And I'm glad that you have been peppering me with questions. And so we decided, right, that we might as well do an additional or a recall podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you're the first one, but I feel like we should update my listeners with what's been going on. And I like to think, can you validate this about me?
We'll see.
I like to think I ask questions that the other people aren't asking you.
Well, the other people being news meter, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You ask questions that are off the charts, different, but important, insightful, and they get to the heart of the matter.
Thank you.
Right? Let's have sound bites. Let's have sound bites. You're actually interested in finding out what's going on. And to the extent I can enlighten you, I'm happy to. So
great. I think we should start by, and I think you'll agree, commending the Moscow Police Department for their work. And
absolutely.
Maybe it's a lesson to the people to be a little bit more patient.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Moscow Police Department, a small police department, but they actually were doing their job, and they were working with state police, and they were working with other police organizations and the FBI, and they did not care to indulge, let's say, the media and even parents of the victims who were attacking them for not having solved the case right away. In fact, we know now that they were making major progress for a long time, and they had to actually collect evidence so that when they did make an arrest, that arrest would stick and they'd be able to prosecute the actual killer.
Yeah.
So now that we know that, you're right, we should commend them and the other agencies that were involved, including the FBI, because it was a team effort. And thanks to people in the community, thanks to people in that house, thanks to neighbors, they had enough evidence to identify track down and arrest the offender. Now, you'll notice I'm not saying his name, and I appreciate that you're not saying his name, because to us in law enforcement, it is not, we don't like to make a big thing of the name of the offender, because unfortunately that just encourages other people who want recognition to do outrageously violent crimes in order to get in, the public's eye. They should be canceled. Okay. They should be canceled.
Let's say these four names, the victims, Ethan, Madison, Zaina, and Kaylee, who unfortunately died in this event.
Well, they were murdered. Yeah, it was not a passive event. And that's something that, you know, somebody decided that he was going to kill people and for his own entertainment purposes, apparently. And we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I want to get into all that. I do want to go back to what you were talking about a second ago, which is what I think is problematic nowadays, but also sort of helpful in a way.
What's that?
Internet sleuths, these online detectives. I know somebody, I interviewed him on this podcast, his name's Morbid, and he was falsely accused of a murder that happened downtown, or a death at the Cecil Hotel, and he absolutely could not have been there. If these people had done the research, they would have known that he was in Mexico at the time, but they just ruined his life. So what is the net result of these so-called online detectives that get involved in these cases to law enforcement?
Let me tell you, there are a number of cases in which people in the community have helped. I mean, the most publicized example probably in the recent few years has been Don't F with Cats. And that was a case of two people. I've met them since. I've had them on my podcast. Amazing people who decided that they didn't like what they saw, that this guy was dangerous. They started warning law enforcement. The guy ends up becoming a murderer, and they were critical in actually locating him and getting him arrested. How did they do it? They were sitting behind their own computers in their own locations. They didn't even they never had physically met with each other.
Right.
But they were cooperating with each other. They were going through Google Earth and they were walking up and down streets. They saw a picture that the offender had posted. Noticed that there was a staircase and a particular type of street light behind him. They noticed, they believed that that was in a particular city, I believe in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so they literally went on Google Earth and scrolled and walked down the streets until they found that staircase, lamppost.
Yeah.
And guess what? The offender's apartment building was in the background. And that's how they identify who he was, where he lived, and so on and so forth.
So are law enforcement frustrated by these people most of the time? Or
no.
No. Okay.
No, I don't think so. The only time it becomes a problem is when those people attack other people, when those people take a little shred of or a thread of evidence and then make broad sweeping conclusions and expect law enforcement to jump on those, when law enforcement actually has to follow the law and they cannot do certain inquiries without reasonable suspicion. Right. They can't do higher level inquiries without probable cause, and they can't arrest someone without probable cause. They can't search a location without consent or probable cause.
Are you saying we should get rid of the FBI and law enforcement and leave it to the online people? Is that what you're saying, Jim Clemente?
I'm concerned about you.
I'm shocked.
I'm very concerned about the fact that you could take what I just finished saying and turn it into that mess, because that is not what I'm saying at all. I mean, by far, no, what I'm saying is law enforcement has to follow the laws.
Right.
Of course, they're happy to get the help of people in the community. The community actually is in every space on this planet, not law enforcement. Law enforcement is a limited number of people, about 500,000 in the United States, including local, state, and federal agents. So there's hundreds of millions of humans here. Right. So obviously they're the eyes and ears of law enforcement, and you're talking to a bunch of them. You're telling them, you can tell them, you're in a position to tell them that they are in a position to help as long as they don't attack people, as long as they don't turn it into something like vigilantism.
Got it. Okay, let's get off of that, because let's talk about this case. But I want to bring up something that I found very interesting that you told me the other night at dinner. You said there are only around 50 FBI profilers in the history of the Bureau, correct?
Yeah, sure. Well, in the beginning, there was only three, and then it grew to five. And then eventually, when I got into it, there was about 25. And, you know, my generation of profilers is now retired, and there's another 25 in there. So it's sort of, it literally took a long time. I mean, maybe 50 is low. There are only 50 retired FBI profilers. And of course, you know, some of my good friends and mentors have passed away, but those people and the institutional knowledge that they created in the behavioral analysis unit is just going to go on forever. Hmm. There's just so much information that we learned. The original profilers interviewed 38 serial offenders in prison, got incredibly detailed information about their motivations, why they did what they did, how they did what they did, and how we can now use that to reverse engineer back to who they were, who committed those crimes. Well, when I left the BAU, I think the number of interviews was up to about 1,500. And that was over a decade ago now.
Is this something, and this debate goes on in comedy all the time, is this something that is innate in a person to have the ability to be a profiler, or is this something that can be learned?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's art and science. Okay, so the science you have to learn, but the art is, I think, innate. Just like in your profession, I mean, anybody can tell a joke. Not everyone can make you laugh when they tell that joke, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. People seem to be able to imitate and get up on stage and do stuff.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually funny, that they actually can hold an audience.
Right.
I mean, that's a skill.
Right.
Right.
Of course.
And some of that is innate, and some of it is sort of a science. You know, there are certain things. Do you know, by the way, the science behind what makes people laugh?
I don't.
I'll tell you, because I learned it.
Okay.
It's your brain expecting one result and getting another that also makes sense, and your brain kicks in.
That's the exact same definition of insanity. It's
really?
Expecting one result, getting another, and then doing it over and over and over. So this makes sense.
I think that makes sense. So that's why I did say that you were insanely funny, didn't I?
Yes,
I mean, that pretty much.
Which I took personally.
Personally. I'm glad you took it.
Listen, my mom's got questions too, so we got to get
your
into
mom,
this.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We're getting your whole family involved. Yeah. I've already asked your dad's, answered your dad's questions. Now your mom.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first I'm hearing of your mom. So, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. I feel like this is a breakthrough moment in our professional relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, thanks for making time. I know you're so busy. And I really appreciate this.
And you're fighting laryngitis over there.
I know. But we got to do this.
You sound actually cooler when you're laryngitis.
Yeah, it's my hot voice.
All
right, let's go over some of the texts I was sending you yesterday.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about my mom. This was the first text I sent you. It seems like you'd need some decent knife skills to kill four people. And one of the Idaho victims, Nathan, Ethan, was a big guy. Do you subscribe to this theory that you have to have good knife skills?
Well, good knife skills. I do. When I profiled the case, I did say that I think the person who did this crime was likely a male in his 20s or 30s who has hunting or fishing in his background, something where he used a knife. So he's comfortable with a knife because he chose that as his weapon of choice. I do believe that he had some familiarity with using a knife, but he killed four people, but not all at the same time. He didn't control the scene. He went from bedroom to bedroom.
Right.
And actually, there was an eyewitness who saw him leaving the premises. So he was not a sophisticated criminal. I don't think he's used a knife before in a crime.
Okay.
I wanted to make that distinction.
Okay.
However, he killed... And again, I feel I my heart goes out to the families and friends of these victims. And I'm not trying to be graphic or crass. What I'm trying to do is explain to people so they understand, so they can help protect themselves and their loved ones. So just one more factor about that is that the people were in two different locations in the building. So he attacked two people who were likely asleep and then attack two other people. So when you're, I mean, he was a, you know, 6 foot two guy, and he had the advantage of surprise and intent. And I'm sure that his adrenaline was pumping. And I think he had extra strength as a result of that. And he had a definite intent to kill. And obviously the people he killed were not a threat to him. They did not intend him any harm. And therefore they were shocked. And unfortunately they lost their lives.
How good was your score at profiling? Like, what did you nail it?
Well, not 100%, because, well, what I said was, I told you a few aspects. I said that this person either had a relationship with one or more people inside that house.
And did he?
Or he had pre-attack surveillance and possibly stalking one or more people in that house. And we have confirmed so far the second half of that, mm-hmm. that he did conduct pre-attack surveillance and basically was stalking, was his phone was in locations where some of the victims' phones were over the course of the weeks and months before the attack. And apparently he had been stalking a number of different college campuses and a number of different people and decided to attack this particular.
How do you know that he was stalking other people on other campuses?
Well, that's all part of the
affidavit.
That's all part of the, well, it's part of the affidavit and the information.
But you have information. I know this for a fact that we don't have. From talking to colleagues. So how do you
hope I don't make a mistake and say something that I shouldn't.
What the other day you said there's a word for somebody that gets a job that allows them to fulfill a dark fantasy.
Yeah, sure. That's called sublimation. So what happens sometimes is that people realize that they have a negative side, a very bad or dark side, and they find a profession or a job that will allow them to indulge this dark fantasy, these negative things, and make it look legitimate. Mm-hmm. But they're actually satisfying an inner need. For example, you could say, imagine a person who is sadistic, who likes causing and witnessing the pain and suffering of others. That person perhaps becoming a dentist, because a lot of people are afraid of the dentist, mm-hmm. and are in pain when they're being treated by the dentist. So,
or a casting director.
Sadistic, or a casting director. There you go.
I was trying to think of something.
Somebody, yeah. You know, and another way to look at it is somebody who has a lust for murder, somebody who wants to kill people, volunteering for the military simply so he can or she can carry out that.
You know what I just realized? Do we have to worry that there are a lot of murderers and killers and people like this in law enforcement?
Well, I don't know, because when you're law enforcement would be more of a control thing than it would be for a murder thing, because the fact is that although there are celebrated cases, the number of law enforcement people who actually end the lives of other people during the course of their careers is a small percentage, mm-hmm. of law enforcement officers. It's not like it is everyone.
Right.
I mean, I told you the story the other day, the only time I ever actually fired my weapon when I was an FBI agent and I was in for 22 years, mm-hmm. was to kill a rabid fox that was attacking me.
Right.
So, you know, that's generally the experience of FBI agents.
Your
they
life
don't
just
fire their weapon.
Yeah.
I know my life is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, well, you're also what we call, you know, an office guy. You know what I mean? Okay.
We're not really.
Jim Clemente, you were out in the field.
Of course I was out in the field. Right, I mean, I did bank robberies. My first job in the
wait
FBI
a minute. You
was
did bank robberies or you?
Well, that's what we say in law enforcement. I'm sure you know that.
Yeah.
That's what we say when we talk about the cases that we investigated. So there were 2,000 bank robberies in New York City in my first year in the FBI.
Right.
And so we were responding to at least six bank robberies a day.
Do people rob banks anymore, or is it just all online?
Well, they still rob banks, sure.
All right, let's go through the speed round here. Do you think he has killed before?
I do not think he has killed before.
Okay. Do you think he would have killed again?
It's possible if he got away with it. I think that he had plans. in the BAU, we talk about serial killing. First of all, it's two or more murders in separate incidents to become a serial killer. By congressional definition, it's three or more. But in the BAU, we use two or more. We see it more as a qualitative than just a quantitative analysis. We look at the nature, the intent, the lack of motive other than a desire to kill. And so these kind of internal motivations take it away from what the standard is in terms of murder investigations, which is somebody in the circle of family and friends is typically the killer. Mm-hmm. So when you see somebody who's been murdered, you look at the people around them, and that's generally where you're going to find the murderer. But in serial cases, that mold is broken because many times they just set a trap, and whoever falls into that net, that's who they kill.
Interesting. Just serial killers.
Well, yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, because they do it more often. Yeah.
Okay. Would he admit if he had killed before?
It depends. I mean, we interviewed a number, obviously many hundreds now, of serial and serial offenders. And some of them are sex offenders. Some of them are serial murderers. Some of them are single murderers that had very, behaviorally rich crimes, let me put it that way. And in those interviews, we've gotten them to admit a tremendous amount of information about their motivations and their history and what they actually did. So I would expect that post conviction, he will probably admit a lot. And it's possible that he will admit, and it's possible that in an effort to get a plea deal, that he might admit more now.
Do you think there is a part of him that is excited or relieved that he is now getting credit for this crime?
Well, I want to twist that a little bit.
I'm sorry. I'm asking the questions.
I know, but I'm answering them. And what I'll say is I do believe that he spent a great deal of time fantasizing about this in advance and was excited by the possibility.
Is there a sexual component to this?
Well, it's a non-traditional sexual component, but yes, I think what motivated him was he got off on the thought of having that power over somebody to take their lives, to put them in fear, and to up close and personal end their lives.
Will he fantasize about this in prison while he masturbates?
Well, like I said, I believe that might have happened before, and certainly there's no reason why it wouldn't happen in the future.
Okay. Okay. Let's discuss what my mom is interested in.
Okay.
Okay. When he was exiting the crime scene, he walked past one of the roommates who saw him in dark clothing and fuzzy eyebrows and wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. She locked herself in the bedroom. Why wouldn't somebody like that? All of us are thinking, I would go check on my roommates. I'd be curious what this person's doing in my house. And I would certainly go check. And if I'm too afraid to check, call 911. Why do you think this person, and I don't want to make this person feel worse than they may already feel, but what?
Okay, well.
And also, and this is.
Possibility.
And by the way, go ahead.
She could have been in shock. That's one thing. Two, this was 4 in the morning, a little after 4 a.m. And I'm not sure if she's the one, but one of these women in this house ordered food delivered at 4 a.m. It's possible that person was the one who had food delivered, and she might have thought that the guy was delivering food to somebody else in the house.
But there's she locked herself in the room in fear. That doesn't her mean instinct said something.
Her right? instincts may have said something, but that doesn't mean that she hasn't had that same instinct hundreds of times in the course of college. Women, unfortunately, men don't get this that much, but I'm sure it happens. But women do get creeped out. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys who hit on women and really creep them out and really cause them to feel fear or uneasy, right, at least, or anxiety. And that may be her reaction to that. It may have been the 15th time that it happened in the last year. Okay. Who knows? I don't know exactly what was going through her mind. We need to wait and let her explain what her actions, okay, were. But I will say this. This is post-COVID. A lot of people wear masks.
Well, do we know if it was that kind of mask?
I don't know what kind of mask it was. I wasn't there. But I do know that people wear masks, and a variety of different types of masks. But clearly, we know now that this was an attempt, a forensic countermeasure to try to hide his identity. Well, he failed miserably,
right,
because he didn't cover his bushy eyebrows, and he couldn't cover his height, and he didn't cover how he was dressed. And all those things can lead back, right, to evidence that can convict him of a crime. This guy was not a sophisticated criminal. Mm-hmm. He may have planned this. He may have thought he was a super villain, but he clearly wasn't. Mm-hmm. He screwed up badly.
I want to talk about that. But first, I just want to say this. Okay. I subscribe to Gavin DeBecker's theory. Gift of fear, which he explained in the book, Gift of Fear. He said, if you feel something, somebody's walking towards you and you feel something and you say, I got to get away, I got to get to the other side of the street, your brain, your subconscious is making so many calculations that you should listen to it. Okay?
Really?
Yep.
Where have you heard that before? I don't know anybody who says stuff like that.
So like maybe you saw this person on a wanted poster somewhere, maybe whatever it is, get across, right, the street. I just want to say that. I want to know,
yes,
this.
Absolutely.
This is the killer. Excuse me, suspected killer is what we call an organized offender. Okay. What for somebody, you're proud of me, aren't you?
Well,
look at you. Yeah. I came through with something.
I can retire now. You can just take over. You can just do this on your own now.
What?
An organized offender. So what does that mean?
He went into the crime scene. He had a game plan and he made a lot of mistakes. What mistakes did he make?
Okay, but that's not the organized offender. But let me just define that for you. So an organized offender is somebody who fantasizes about committing the crime and plans the crime in advance, brings the implements necessary to commit the crime, and gets away with it.
That's exactly what I just said.
You can play back the thing. You can play back the recording. And takes away the evidence with him. Now, he didn't do that. He left the sheath of his knife, which contained his DNA thumbprint on the snap of the sheath. Mm-hmm. And that's how they were able to identify him. He left it on the bed of one of the victims.
Okay, and they keep saying they identified this guy through his DNA. How did they have his DNA?
Well, that thumbprint contains cells from his thumb, which can be used. You only need two or three cells.
But how did they...
They extract DNA from
it. I get that, but is he in a database or something?
No, he wasn't in a database. So then they followed him. They probably went through his trash, and they got something he threw away, and then they matched the DNA from the thumbprint to the DNA in the garbage where he was residing.
Got it. So he was a suspect already. Then they matched the DNA. This wasn't like he was
in that confirmed who it was. Okay. Yes. They had him as a suspect, probably, I think, most likely because of the car. I think they identified. I think, well, all these things are happening at once. They're not done in a vacuum.
When did he know he was caught?
Well, when they put the cuffs on him, I'm sure. But I think he probably also, you know, had a butthole tightening experience when he saw the picture of the car, similar to the one he was driving. Like, that's a bad situation.
Because I read this. He received a new license plate for the Elantra 5 days after the killings, the affidavit said. Citing the records from the Washington State Department of Licensing. So he must have suspected something.
I don't know if he applied for that before or after. But remember, he planned for
this. A lot of stuff. So I just convict him.
But he could have applied for that before and it just got delivered 5 days after.
Smart.
But this was his intent, obviously, to register the car in a different state. But here's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. He used his own vehicle to commit this crime.
Mistake one.
He left the area shortly after committing this crime. That was another thing that I said.
Left the state. Yep.
Right. he turned his cell phone. He had his cell phone on when he began the journey to the crime scene. He turned it off before he got near it and turned it back on shortly after the crime was committed.
Right. So
why would somebody now either turned it off or on, or he put it into airplane mode? I'm not sure, but it wasn't pinging on any towers during that time period. But specifically during the time period of pre-attack surveillance and the crime being committed, that time his phone wasn't pinging on towers. But before and after it was.
Right.
Explain that. Why would you turn your phone off? Why would you do something to hide, to mask your location of your phone unless that was a forensic countermeasure? That's what I believe
it was. Is that circumstantial evidence? Is that circumstantial?
It is circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, nobody shuts their phones off nowadays. We have 5 minutes left, Jim.
Okay, what other mistakes? See if I can answer
what
some other more of your mother's question.
What other mistakes did he make?
What other mistakes he made?
Do you think he's shocked that he got caught?
I think I think the realization hit him during the course of the crime itself that he was in way over his head, because everything else was theoretical and nothing ever goes according to fantasy. Now, this is, you asked me earlier, would he do it again? If he had gotten away with this, he would continue to fantasize about it and he would think, okay, next time I've learned more. Next time I'll do it this way. Next time I'll fix this. And it would still not go exactly right. So what happens is in their fantasies, everything is perfect. And I believe he got off sexually by fantasizing about being able to murder these people or somebody like them. You know, he fit them into his fantasy, but it didn't work because, again, he walks into this place. There were six adults. And I said when I profiled it, you don't walk into a place with six live adults occupying this dwelling without taking a huge risk, because any one of them could have had their phone out and taken a picture, could have called 911, could have had a weapon themselves.
Right.
So many things could have happened.
Why didn't he kill the eyewitness on the way out?
He may have been, I don't know, he may have been wiped out. So what happens is you get this huge influx of adrenaline, right? And you get this super strength during the commission of this crime. But what happens is then it goes away,
right?
And you're literally wiped out, completely wiped out. And what happens is a lot of times is people pass out. There's times when people, after committing murders, multiple murders, will open a refrigerator and drink some orange juice or eat a banana, something, because they feel like they're going to pass out.
Right.
And so he may have been in that state. He also may have been focused on one or two particular victims, and when he got to those victims and killed them, he stopped. So there's a lot that could happen.
Yeah, but you always kill the eyewitnesses, at least in the movies. What did you see?
Oh, come on.
Did you see his court appearance?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Okay, because I was curious if there's anything you can tell from his body language.
No, I didn't. I, you know, to me, once he's caught, it's like I don't want to know his name. I don't want to know anything more about him. To me, you know, he's a foul excuse for humanity. He's, you know, people are calling him evil and so forth. I always say, if you call somebody evil, you're trying to give them more power than they actually had. He's a bad person. He's an ignorant, bad person. He did horrible things.
How sure are you that he is the killer?
Well, I feel very confident given what they've published and what I know about the crime scene and the crime itself, that there's no question that he actually committed these crimes.
Do you think his family and friends suspect that he would ever have done this? Do you think that they're going to now come out and say, well, he was killing animals when he was younger? He sort of he drew these pictures in class. Or is this a complete blindsided shock?
I know a number of people have come forward and said he was quiet and he made people feel uncomfortable and things like that. Maybe he was a disenfranchised kind of person. And those are probably risk factors. You know, you're talking about the homicidal triad we used to use, which is cruelty to animals, bedwetting, and fire setting. And that used to be used as an indicator. Of course, now we have many more indicators in the violent, risk factor list, but being feeling disenfranchised, is a high risk factor. Obviously, this guy attempted to become a police officer. He wanted to put himself in a position of power. He probably felt very diminished in terms of his own personality, and he wanted to feel powerful. And the way he did that was fantasizing about killing people, innocent, helpless people, and making them in fear of their life, and then ending their lives in a brutal way. And that is, that's a disgusting thing to fantasize about. And any of your listeners, anybody's out there hearing it, if you feel yourself sexually attracted to violence, you need to get help. You need to get help right away, because that is a horrific thing to do. And you have no right ever to do anything like that to anybody else.
Jim Clemente, I want to thank you for coming on, for being for helping me understand this. You're a tremendous guest. You've become a friend. And
of course.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time. I wish we had more time to talk about it. Once again, we took a 10-minute interview and made it 40 minutes. We did it again. Thank you, Jim Clemente. Welcome back. Thank you, Jim Clemente, once again. You're an amazing guest. You've become a friend. And it excites me that I know somebody that was in the FBI. Like, I feel like I've contacts. I feel like if I need him, I've got an amazing resource. There was a question I had as I was editing the episode, or that portion of this episode, the interview with Jim. I said, what characteristics did you see in this crime that made you think the suspect had fled the area? And I haven't even, I'm reading this for the first time. Jim texted me back and he said, I've worked many hundreds of homicides, and there are multiple factors that go into the profile. The messy crime scene, the unprofessional nature of the kills, the high risk nature of the kills, and the target age of the victims. Told me it was a younger, inexperienced killer, and they tend to freak out after the kill and take off to distance themselves from the crime. So that answers that. The problem with interviewing a guest as great as Jim Clemente is you ask one question, and as he starts to go on, and trust me, he rambles, you have like eight questions in a row. And you're like, and then you forget that question. You want to get back to that question. So you can't get to everything. But Jim Clemente, thank you so much for being a guest. Thank you to you, the listeners, and everybody else for listening to What's Wrong with Ornie Adams. My name's Ornie Adams, episode 70. I did it with laryngitis. I did it. Thank you, Ernesto Hurtado, for mastering the audio, for putting this stuff together, and for getting it up on the internet so you guys can listen to it. Episode 71, I hope to cover the Cirque du Soleil mess up. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be great? Come see me in Chicago at the Schomburg Improv. Come see me at McCurdy's in Sarasota. And this week in Los Angeles, I'll be at the Comedy Store tonight. I was there last night. I'll be at the Improv tomorrow. I will be at the Laugh Factory Friday and Saturday. First show at the Improv, I'll be closing it. The problem is all these clubs want me to close every show, and I'm sick of closing it. I want to go on in the middle of the show when it's easy. It's easy. That's what I want. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to all the people that are on my supporting me on Patreon, or supporting my videos online. We're going to do this together. We're going to do this without the corporations and these people, unless they get their shit together and come to me and make me an offer. I'm ready to shoot another special. I'm ready to do it. Can't thank you guys enough for listening and letting me get this off my chest. I appreciate it. I'm now about to leave Big Yellow and go back into the house and see what else is broken. That's what my day is. My day is fixing stuff. Take care of yourselves.